Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
I am the table! I am the table! I am the table! I am the table!
Guys, welcome back to Talk About Table. I am the magnificent Matt Willis. And I am joined, as always, by the Podfather himself, Mags. Welcome back, sir. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You don't sound that magnificent. You sound rough as rats.
I appreciate that, dude. I appreciate that. I am in recovery from... Miss Rona has visited the Willis Lewis house, unfortunately. But she has been kicked. She's been cooked firmly to touch. And we're going to get through it the best way we can. But that means I've introduced this point. His Lordship himself, Conrad Newton.
Hello, Happy New Year. You missed out the fact that I've had a haircut. You were ragging on me about that like all through December, and I actually got a haircut.
I was not.
Nobody said anything.
I thought you'd tied it back.
No, I've had it cut. It was getting too much.
I didn't rag on your haircut, Conrad. That was completely your... That was your employee, Mr. Harris, I believe, who was ragging on your...
That was a thing that happened.
I reject your allegations against myself. We'll blame Chris. Okay, and of course at this point we should of course welcome, I think, our guest. We have a guest, and it's someone who we all have a lot of love and a lot of time for. I think that's enough niceties. And Graham from The Good Cop, Bad Cop, and MGB and JGB Superstar.
I'm just on par with you guys. This is my
trying to catch us up. I'm not happy at this. 36
hours. I think it's hanging around you guys. It's having a bad influence. I just realised how appropriate this is that at the start we were talking about soup, because the last time I was actually on we had Soupgate as well. So
well,
it all goes full circle.
Soupgate that failed very, very dramatically.
This is long-term storytelling, like,
this is NATO redemption storytelling.
the best part about doing the stuff of this show is you cannot script the best stuff. Speaking of unscripted, we're going to start with Graham. Talk at the table.
All right. Well, as people who've listened to Good Cop, Bad Cop will know already, we had some technical issues yesterday, so we had to fall back on a pre-recorded episode. So I'm just going to use one of my Good Cop moments from yesterday, or my main Good Cop moment. I'm the digital subscriber to the PWI magazine, so I get it about 10 days before the people who get their hard copy through to physically read. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was this is the episode where the fans get to vote on what they think is the best wrestler, best tag team, etc., etc. One of the things that TW Takes talked about with us last week, was the fact that, I apologize, a slip of the tongue. It's very easy.
3 minutes. 3 minutes.
if people like Peyton Royce in particular, he used as an example, is often pointed out for her looks first and then her wrestling second, or if at all mentioned for that. So the fact that the fans voted for this, I was really impressed. And Matt, we've also mentioned this multiple times. People left WrestleMania for the main event, the whole three rows in front of us, because it was women's wrestling and we're not interested in that. So it was nice to see that some of the major awards actually went to the women. So the tag team of the year, surprisingly, didn't go to FTR. It actually went to Sasha and Bayley. Feud of the year also went to Sasha and Bayley. Wrestler of the year, not surprisingly, it was John Moxley. That was number one on their list. But second was Bayley, and fourth was Sasha. So already there's some recognition there for some of the great work that they've done this year. We also had the Rookie of the Year. Dominic Mysterio won that one with 54%. But second on that list was, I'm doing this from the top of my head. I'm not using notes today, so I'm probably going to mess her name up, so you can help me out here, AEW watchers. I think it's Anna Jay. I think that's what her name is. Oh, whew, I got that right. I was kind of surprised that in the top four that I didn't see Matt's favourite cardiologist from the University of Maryland. Is it Pat McAfee? He wasn't on that list. Pat McAfee did get an honourable mention, though. So he was in that list as well. And I'm trying to think, there is one more that I'm missing. Oh, Inspirational Wrestler of the Year. Not really surprising. Shad won that one straight away. When you sacrifice your life for your child, that kind of gets instant recognition. But second on that list was Thunder Rosa. for all the work that she's done coming up through NWA, also working with obviously AEW as well this year. So it was good to see that the females were well represented within that chart. The fact that that came from the fans as well spoke volumes to me when they could have easily just focused on male-centered wrestlers. And the fact that multiple organizations were included there as well. Obviously WWE kind of heavily. AEW got a mention in there as well, and so did NWA. Kind of surprising, actually. Impact didn't get a single mention, considering I consider theirs one of the better female rosters right now. But it was great to see so many females getting recognized on that PWI chart. I know I keep saying chart. My brain has gone, and I can't remember the word. Awards. There we go.
Did you see the list there, Max?
I'd read or heard a podcast talking about them, and yeah, I've got to echo what Graham said. It's so cool to see women's wrestling really like front and center, especially when you consider the year that Sasha and Bayley and Asuka have had in WWE. How they've really kind of they've been the stars of the COVID era, certainly, and Impact's women's division has been doing absolute bits. Stardom has been really kind of pushing over in Japan. And even though it's not been the best, AEW have still got some incredibly talented wrestlers over there. And the crossovers that they've done with the NWA have been some of the more interesting matches that we've seen all year. So I am not at all surprised that women's wrestling features so prominently. And the fact that it's coming from the fans, like Graham said, it's showing kind of like a change in of taste in wrestling, that women's wrestling is really kind of being pushed. And hopefully that'll lead to more things like the women's main event at WrestleMania and really kind of pushing women's wrestling into those main event spots rather than being just the 5 or 10 minutes kind of like piss break matches.
Mm.
I did, before you continue, I just realised there was one big omission there. The Match of the Year award, not surprisingly, I saw a lot of Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, The Young Bucks. I saw that number one on a lot of people's list. Number three on that list was actually Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania. So it was good to see that was recognised as one of the bigger matches of the year as well.
I mean, I remember hating that match when it happened. And it's only going back and watching it some 6 months later, you actually appreciate how good of an actual match is, even if you didn't particularly like the way it ended. But yeah, it's a really, really good match.
Conrad, anything to add from your point of view, sir?
Yeah, I think I can only really like echo the sentiments that have been like shared. I think it's really, really good because I think like obviously has been said, like women's wrestling is kind of, there's still kind of like not a stigma, but like it's kind of like a bad kind of feel around it in like some circles, and it's just kind of, a lot of people kind of do still see it as like, you know, like the piss break match or kind of not like the same as like the men. And you see like sort of high profile like use that term like extremely loosely, like Disco Inferno, and he had like this whole thing about being anti women's wrestling. And yes, to see people like leaving at WrestleMania like just 2 years ago, and now kind of women kind of carrying I'd say they carried WWE in the MD Arena era. I'd say Asuka in particular, Becky Lynch up until she left did really, really well, and obviously Impact and NWA have kind of doing really, really well as well, and AEW were getting there, and yeah, it's just really, really cool to see, and I'm kind of glad that we're kind of very, hopefully we continue like on this upward path moving forward, that kind of we kind of throw in looks out the window and we're just like, okay, she's a really good wrestler and she's better, just as good or like better than the men. So I'd say in 2020 like the women were like largely better than the men in terms of like all round matches and characters.
It was very refreshing across the whole 2020 that the majority of the companies felt comfortable throwing the company on the backs of the women and letting them carry it. We saw that as recognised with Sasha, Bayley, Asuka, Becky before she became pregnant, of course, Charlotte before she got injured, of course. they literally ran with a product. I mean, Nikki Cross was continually stepping up to fill the gaps, pretty much, unfortunately. I personally believe she's a higher level, personally, than just the fill-in, as it were. Alexa Bliss, some of the most amazing character work you'll see ever, let alone as a female. Obviously, the stuff from Thunder Rosa is, you know, mark out worthy. Obviously, the amazing stuff in Impact's women's division as well. AEW's women's division, it just needs unlocking. That's all it needs to do. Somehow, needs to unlock it somehow. So, absolutely fantastic to see them, rightly recognised by the fans, as Graham mentioned. Graham, you know how I've not been able to remember who, because obviously you very famously decided to take your toilet break during Ms. Shane McMahon, didn't you, WrestleMania? You famously did, so.
Yeah.
Can you remember when I took mine? Because it's just come to me when I did.
I don't think you did you?
I did, yeah. And embarrassingly, it was in the women's tag team title match.
Oh, you heathen.
Oh.
You have incel, Matt.
How dare you?
You didn't miss much, though. I think you left as soon as one match had finished, kind of ran up those steps, and then came back as soon as you could. So you missed minimal match.
I literally was coming down as the injuries were still happening still. So I didn't miss any match, any in-ring action, but I had to go, or I was going to need to ask someone to get a mop. At that point, so it was a case of I've got to go.
I would not be surprised if that happens a lot at WrestleMania, that people just go.
Do you know
we're not on the good cop, bad cop, but can I share a bad cop moment with you that I didn't realise until recently, particularly not having a chance to talk to you, Matt, and I was going to, then I totally forgot. I've started watching Miz and Mrs. Start Season 2. I absolutely love that show. There's a reason why I'm talking about it. They're up to... They're up to the point where they're actually at the WrestleMania episode. So I've actually seen more of that match now, just from seeing the clips on Miz and Mrs., than I have from before. And I had a serious misconception. So obviously Miz's dad, I've seen the picture with like his fists up, and that's kind of like the iconic thing. I thought that was from Raw the night after. I didn't realize that was actually a WrestleMania moment. I had no idea until I watched Miz and Mrs. That's how little attention I paid to that match. And I deliberately stayed in the outside circle, looking in the, taking pictures of the stadium, trying to find some nachos, which I couldn't do. And then as soon as I knew the match was over, I went in. You're right, Matt. There were some good moments in it. But yeah, I'm glad I didn't watch it.
There were good moments in it, but I prefer to not watch it.
There are some people who are not convinced that that was a good match. And you know what? That is fine. Because not everyone is going to be allowed to like everything. As we have proven on this show, just because one person likes one thing doesn't mean everyone has to like the same thing.
And then on the opposite side of the coin, there's people who are going to think that that's a good match when it clearly wasn't. And they're also well able to be wrong too.
I enjoyed it.
You're a mark. You're a WWE mark, though.
It wasn't the match of the card, but it was enjoyable. I enjoyed the atmosphere. I enjoyed the sentiment. I was hoping to actually get them a bit closer rather than where they actually ended up, but, you know, it happens.
So you were sports entertained rather than wrestling, enjoying wrestling, Matt?
I experienced a multitude of different presentations of the wrestling product across 3 days, Conrad.
And the highlight was the Miz.
The highlight was ECW on the day before. As I've said many times, best part.
Hark at him now, pretending to be one of the indie darlings. Listen, Matt, you are unabashed. WWE mark.
I am, but I still enjoyed Orange Cassidy's show better.
Fair play.
It was phenomenal.
I know that it's not something that we approve of, but Dave Meltzer's ratings were 1.75 for that match.
And don't forget, Dave Meltzer hates
it. Often that just says it all, then, doesn't it?
Yeah, but recently, he's been enjoying Orange Cassidy. I think the thing with Dave is that he likes what's popular at the time. And Orange Cassidy was kind of like just on the precipice of being a big star. and now he's with his with AW, and he's with Dave's boys. Suddenly he's the hot shit. So yeah,
we've all liked Orange Cassidy before it was called like Orange Cassidy though.
Orange Cassidy was the most popular wrestler in that PWI rankings as well. He only got about 20-something percent, because there's obviously other wrestlers that are very popular too as well.
That's, I think, still Mott pretty. Was
18. But the fact that he won, I was really proud of that. Because I will give that as my answer. Who's your favorite wrestler? Orange Cassidy.
20% is a huge amount. To see,
that is Orange Cassidy. So I was pleased that he got that recognition. I'm so proud that AEW didn't try and mess with that character at all. They let him. They gave him the chance to run with that. And kudos for them for doing that. And what a great decision.
And was it at that WrestleMania weekend where a show for the one of the GCW shows went down, and he basically booked a full show on the fly, calling like loads of favors from his wrestling friends, and basically booked that whole show on the fly? That, what a talent!
That was the show we went to. Yeah.
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 Yeah, absolutely.
Seven out of 13 falls. The 1 minute, the rumble with all the swamp monsters or whatever. Yeah, they had some
battle royal. Yes, with Paige's mum was in that as well. Chris Statlander, Alley Cat. Oh god, such an amazing.
I can't remember his name. I think he might even be in jail right now. Who read us a story, Matt, with his cat on his lap?
Teddy Hart. Teddy Hart.
Teddy Hart. Thank you.
And then read every line, and then suddenly the crowd exploded like he just hit a suplex. It was fantastic. It was
Matt, I think you have to do your obligatory mention of, also from that event.
There's a lot of things.
You need a little extra cute. Wheeler Yuta?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I handled Wheeler Yuta's balls, yes. I did.
They had a dodgeball game in the middle of the match. I think that was what it was supposed to be, wasn't it?
And then a wrestling match broke out. And afterwards, Willie Yuta posed with his volleyballs and a great picture of me holding his balls.
It's always got to be mentioned.
Yeah,
I think we might be on for a world record here. I think my moment took... I think we're recording. We're about 30 minutes in. And we're that was just my first moment, I think.
I am the table!
Max, talk to a table.
Move on, guys.
Okay, so I've got two kind of topics I want to approach, but I think new year, old topic. Let's talk a little bit of COVID. So, Matt, you're currently pretending, I mean, really have got COVID, and it's definitely not a scar for work. but there's been quite a few stories in the wrestling world about COVID, and quite a few differing kind of viewpoints when it comes to one company announcing that they've had issues and a totally other company kind of not getting as much grief. So we had Drew McIntyre about a week ago came out and confirmed that he had COVID, and WWE got rightly blasted for having him in segments with some of the legends like Ric Flair. And then we hear on the grapevine, and not even through AEW themselves, but through Chris Jericho kind of spilling the beans on his own podcast, that he also had COVID in September when he wrestled 5 times that month. And was also on announcing duties twice. And he'd also been at a super spreader event at Sturgis Rally not long before. And in the same month, we had Lance Archer have COVID and also Nick Jackson have COVID. But whilst Jericho got a little bit of backlash, he didn't get half as much backlash as the WWE did when Drew McIntyre announced that he had COVID. And then a tweet came out, I think it was yesterday, from Kevin Nash, where he was replying to a Google news feed about WWE trying to kill Ric Flair with having him involved in segments when there's clearly an issue with COVID. And he said the grief that WWE are getting is really, really unfair. It's not showing the way that WWE are doing really good COVID testing. He says every time he's been involved in a segment or been part of the WWE show. They've been quarantined in a hotel room before testing, then the test, and then re-quarantined until they are brought to the arena, and they don't come into contact with hardly anyone. It's literally just only the people they are working with for that segment, and as soon as their segment's done, they are quarantined straight away back to the hotel before returning home. So I wonder what your guys' takes are on the way that AEW have kind of been getting positive praise for how they've been handling COVID, and the way that WWE have been handling it and still getting the negative backlash.
Who wants to go first? Comrade,
I'll go first.
Comrade, are you keen to go ahead, sir?
Yeah, this is kind of just, this is ridiculous. Like, honestly, you look at kind of how it's really weird. Like, you'd think that kind of the smaller companies would have issues with, like, dealing with COVID. And you look at, like, Ring of Honor. And they had an absolute mess in 2019. And like, obviously, it kind of spilled over into 2020. But they have handled it the absolute best out of any company since coming back. I think they've had the bubble. Everybody's been quarantined. They had two tests. And I remember on Near Falls, we got the PR. Like, we got the kind of release before it got put out to the public. And I read it and I was like, okay, this is kind of good. This is how all the companies should be doing it. And yeah, the fact that I think AEW are kind of, considering the track record they have with looking after their talent anyway, like not even taking into consideration like the COVID stuff, and the fact that it's like their biggest guy that's doing it, and it's like, why? I guess because they're new and because there are so many people that will make excuses for them, and I'll be like, oh yeah, but they're still learning and still like doing this and this, and it's like, oh my god, like, just admit that Chris Jericho is like, I used to have my respect for Chris Jericho has fallen off a cliff in this last like 9 months or so, and like, he has become like the world's biggest dickhead when it comes to COVID. Like, he has had conspiracy theorists on his podcast. He has denied
that's,
it.
That's when he revealed that he had COVID. He had a doctor.
Two super spreaders as well.
Yeah, it was both. He was a massive conspiracy theorist, and then he just drops this nonchalantly drops this bomb that he had COVID, and he says he isolated, but I went back and did like the maths almost, and there was only one 10-day period in September where he wasn't at an AEW taping. So unless he magically got COVID that exact day and then quarantined for those exact 10 days, he spread that disease to somebody else. And yeah, it's he's like you said, Conrad, he's gone so down in my estimations. And this is a guy who I consider as the GOAT when it comes to wrestling. But with the Trump stuff and the COVID stuff, yeah, he's becoming a massive dickhead.
And it's just like a shame. And like with WWE and just like hearing how Kevin Nash said he's been kind of dealt with, I guess, in terms of COVID and that. And I guess you can, there will be people kind of saying, oh, AEW in like an open air arena, so like the risks are minimal and stuff, and they've done everything they can. And it's like, just admit that kind of they're being like negligent with a lot of things. And obviously, yeah, cool, they're still new, but like they have Tony Khan, who's involved in the NFL, like especially this is like going back to concussion stuff. But Tony Khan knows his stuff, and surely the Bucks and Cody being so heavily involved, and Kenny as well, like surely they know. And surely like common sense with COVID and like having Jericho do commentary in September, and obviously having JR on commentary, who is like probably highly at risk.
And Tony Schiavone, just incredibly, he's not getting any younger.
Exactly. And it's like, it just confuses me. And I think it just shows kind of like the, I don't want to say duality, like I can't think of the word, but like how split the wrestling is, like the wrestling community is, like they'll shit on WWE for everything that they can, that possibly can, but then AEW and like it would be like turn the blind eye to it. And it's a real shame, because I think WWE have kind of handled it well considering the size of their roster and how much content they do in a week, and the fact that they're running like two different venues rather than one. And we've had like what, one outbreak in the performance center, and they've had like one confirmed case of COVID with Drew, mm-hmm. and he's been isolated straight away, and they made a big deal out of it.
And lest we forget the grief that Ricochet recently got for having a, for being outside in a party with a lot of people. What an idiot he is. But yeah, I think the way AEW were given kind of a free pass for the same things that WWE done is, yeah, it really kind of irritates me, because I think if you tar one company, you've got to treat the other companies the same. And yeah, we're just not seeing that with a lot of wrestling fans.
Let's go to Captain
Neutral. Can I chip in one thing, Matt?
You are Captain Neutral. I'll go to you next, so go ahead.
Okay, so I would definitely agree with you guys that it definitely seems that WWE has definitely had, they've been hit much harder with this. And certainly Jericho certainly was being dishonest about that, and I didn't know that side of it. One thing I will say about AEW is, though, one of their wrestlers did actually announce a COVID incident yesterday. So Nyla Rose on Twitter, I found out that an immediate family member has tested positive for COVID-19, and as a result, I've been directly exposed. As per safety protocol, I will be isolating, self-quarantine for the next 14 days. Why do I mention this? Because of the seriousness of the situation and the timeline for quarantine. This will affect the weekend's virtual meet and greet with Damage 365 Promotions and prevent me from competing against Layla Hirsch this coming Wednesday on Dynamite. I'm very sorry to anyone that was looking forward to these events, but keeping everyone as safe as possible must be priority at this time. Thank you for your understanding. Stay safe, everyone. Please social distance and mask up. So full credit there to an AEW wrestler to obviously they're being very transparent there, explaining exactly what the situation is, and not just putting out a perfunctory "I won't be appearing on Dynamite this week," making it very clear several times within that this is a serious situation. What can be done to try and prevent this when it happens with all the protocols that are in place, and then also the reminder at the end to mask up and stay safe. So it sounds like AEW might be getting a little bit better with what they're doing, and perhaps everybody is. But I saw that one yesterday, so I thought that was worth mentioning.
I think the thing is, though, Graham, and yeah, the wrestlers themselves are coming out and being transparent. The company's not. The company's not the ones putting out these presses to say that wrestlers have become ill. It's coming from the talent themselves, and I don't see that as professional, because if these talents didn't come out and say it, we would be none the wiser. And AEW would still be like being praised highly for having such an outstanding COVID testing protocol, when in reality they've probably had as many infections as WWE. We just haven't heard about it because they've kept it quiet.
I'll give you one more company that did a good job with this, something that we both watched, Darren, Synergy Pro Wrestling. I can't remember exactly which event it was. It might have been the Black Friday one, but MV Young reported to Synergy that he had COVID, would not be able to attend. And they could have just swept it under the carpet and said MV Young is unavailable. And they made it very clear that he had COVID, therefore he wasn't going to be at the event. So they've been very transparent as well. When it's not directly come from them, it's come from the wrestler, but they've passed that same message on. Yeah. And Colin's been very clear about that. As soon as it's not safe, or as soon as there's any problems, we will shut this thing down. And he already did that once in 2020. So there are certainly companies that are better at it than other companies, for sure.
Conrad, so what are you saying?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I think the big thing that a lot of companies like need to do, and I think a lot of companies like are doing, like Synergy and like WWE as well, with the Drew McIntyre stuff, and the fact that they themselves as a brand are like putting out their, like, they're making it like crystal clear that this is what's happening, this is why, like, this is what we're doing to deal with that, and we're going to do something to kind of, that's kind of going to be worth you still giving your money or kind of investing in us as a product. And I feel that's kind of, not releasing it as a company is kind of, as we mentioned, it's irresponsible. We kind of loses a lot of goodwill, I think, moving forward. And when fans are allowed back, and I think there's going to be like a lot of questioning, like, for those companies that didn't put it out as a company and left it to the wrestlers, like, am I really willing to give my money to this company who kind of didn't really want to kind of go public with this, and kind of were more fussed about like saving their own ass and kind of potentially trying to sweep it under the carpet, like we've seen with Jericho and probably like Nick Jackson as well. And it's just, it's so simple, just put out a statement and it, you could move forward and you can offer something else, but it's just, it seems incredibly lazy, and it's a shame that like the number two company in America can't do like the most basic of things with such a serious issue.
It's the most serious of issues, and I mean, I can vouch for the fact of how easy it can be transmissible, unfortunately. I mean, I take every precaution possible, and I still got it. Unfortunately, these things do happen. The best way, as you guys have all said, is transparency is the best way forward, because at the end of the day, people are going to be judging you on this eventually. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but going forward in the future, people will be being judged on how they dealt with this crisis. And but some companies have done a lot better job than some of the bigger companies. And I'll say it's the smaller companies who have been getting, in my opinion, the better press for it because of how transparent they've been.
I think the issue is as well, like, a lot of us aren't ever going to mention this again because we forget, like, in the digital age, and like, the news cycle is so incredibly short. And I guarantee that the Jericho stuff and the Nick Jackson stuff and even the Drew McIntyre stuff will be forgotten in about 3 weeks' time. We'll be on to complain about something else. I don't think it will be an issue, like, in, say, best case scenario, what, like, 9 months' time when, like, a lot more people have been vaccinated and, like, they can potentially begin looking at reopening and kind of getting back to some sense of normality.
We're not
going to remember then.
Whilst I agree with you, Conrad, that probably will be the case. I sincerely hope that a lot of people do remember these.
Oh, absolutely. Times.
But I also have a feeling that, unfortunately, you may be right.
I am the table!
So can you talk about the table then, Conrad?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So Max has already took one of my topics, but I've got about nine. No, that's okay. So we haven't recorded for like nearly a month, so we've got like I've got loads. Do I take it to New Japan? No, not at the minute anyway. I'm going to talk about the best wrestler to ever live, in my opinion, and that is Daniel Bryan.
Okay, Daniel Bryan. What about Daniel Bryan?
Daniel Bryan Appreciation Night, this is what this show is now called for, like, this episode, Daniel Bryan Appreciation Night. And I just want to, like, say, like, how kind of cool it is. I kind of fell out with WWE kind of as we went into the first lockdown in the UK, so that was March. And I kind of stopped watching the, like, the YouTube clips, and I just kind of, on the off chance, I caught it on Channel 5 on a Sunday morning. That's, like, the only time I really watched it. But Daniel Bryan's work at the minute and kind of the last few weeks of SmackDown are slowly kind of pulling me back into the WWE stuff. And I think it's kind of cool because I remember, when was it that he said, I think it was like an episode of Talk, and Bryan said that this was like his last full-time run as a performer, his last full-time run as a wrestler. And I think it's kind of cool now that he's kind of made that information public and he's starting to put over people, and he's using the creative control that he reportedly has to kind of put over the wrestlers that he likes. Well, not people that he likes, but people like he thinks can kind of fill the void that he's going to leave when he becomes kind of like part-time. So we've seen, like, in the last 2 weeks alone, and we've had Nakamura beat him, and I think that's a big reason that Nakamura's kind of gotten over so quickly again. And then Cesaro on Friday. And obviously the Chad Gable and Otis stuff, which is just taken out of context, it's like the funniest thing ever. And yeah, I think it's just really cool. I think at a time where like Goldberg has kind of come back, and it's very possible that he's going to win the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble. I think the lesson learned, I guess, is, and we can apply this to like the world we live in at the minute, is be a Daniel Bryan and don't be a Goldberg. Mm-hmm. That's like be selfless and don't take up more than you need to, or like don't outstay your welcome.
I don't even think it's so much a case of outstay your welcome. It's thinking of how wrestling is going to live on after you've gone, and with Goldberg, he has no kind of concept of that. This is about making Goldberg a big star, or keeping Goldberg as a big star, where Daniel Bryan is clearly looking at the future of wrestling and WWE after he's gone. And yeah, we need way more people to be like that, able to kind of pay it forward, than we do people who are just so so keen to keep hold of their spot, which it, that so leads into that the mindset of the 80s and 90s where people were so protective of being on top. And wrestling's changed now. It's about bringing in the next generation of talent and the new hungry younger wrestlers and kind of knowing when your time in the sun has ended, I suppose.
Mm. I mean, Daniel Bryan, don't get me wrong, he one of the best I've ever seen in the ring, absolutely. And I'd be excited to see what happens with his last great run, as it were. Goldberg is a legend, and legends need to retire or they end up tarnishing these legends. I mean,
yeah, I think
great. Go on.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, the line that Drew came out with when Goldberg kind of got challenged him, and this has really stuck out to me, the fact that Drew has said that fighting Goldberg would be like beating up his dad. But then if Goldberg wins, you, by having Drew say that, you've essentially buried Drew because he's got beaten up by his dad. Mm-hmm. And like, it's kind of, it's just not a good situation. And I think it's ridiculous that Goldberg's likely going to use the sway that he's got backstage. And whether this turns into kind of a redemption arc and a WrestleMania win, hopefully, as they've got planned as of today, to have it in front of fans, to have a Drew victory there at WrestleMania again. But I think that's just irrelevant. I think it's a weird situation. And it's just, yeah.
To show how concerned Comrade is, he has taken off his glasses
and put his monocle
like in. Did you guys notice that? Like, that, those locks, like, absolutely flopped forward when he took his glasses off. How much do you have taken off there, Conrad? That was fun.
It was like New Year. It was down to like here, down to like my just past my shoulder, and now it's kind of
that case, okay.
Like top of my neck now.
See, it's showing his appreciation for Daniel Bryan. He's going for the whole Captain Planet look now.
Yeah, I just need to get a cardigan. That's the one thing I'm missing.
And a wooden towel.
I can make one of those at home. We've got enough stuff in the back garden.
Do you know what? I actually looked on the website. They're actually the same price as the actual WWE.
£600 they are.
What?
£600.
Yeah.
For a weed belt with stones on it.
As tempting as it is to get that, I'm very happy with one I got at WrestleMania. Thank you very much. Graham, you didn't witness Goldberg's run in WCW, I don't think, did you? Did you?
I did. Yeah, I'm watching around that time. It's like 2000s, right?
Yeah, that was in WCW.
That would have been the end of his run. It was kind of hot in the same time as the NWO was hot.
Yeah, I remember. I've just been biting my tongue because I'm ready to defend Goldberg whenever you guys have finished what you want to say.
I'm bringing Devil's Advocate over, I'll be great.
I'd have to say, because I'm pretty sure that my compatriots on this show are the same opinion as me, is that Goldberg should stay retired. Graham, why do you think otherwise?
All right, well, I'm going to put this forward to you. We know that he has, I think it's a multi-year contract. I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it's like 2 or 3 years. He's guaranteed like 2 or 3 matches per year. That was the plan. Now, that was signed, though, pre-COVID. Now, where is the place for Goldberg? Saudi Arabia. That's the perfect place for him. Like, in Saudi Arabia, they even wanted, like, Yokozuna in those matches, not even realizing he'd been dead for many years. They want those
and Warrior. They wanted Warrior as well.
Exactly. That's the so I think if I'm trying to work through Vince's thinking here, which is a dangerous thing to do, but I think he got him for that type of place. They were going to Saudi Arabia a couple of times a year. That's where I think that would have been where his 2 or 3 matches were. Now, I think, and they're obviously not on the road right now, but if you're going to, and you're touring all the different countries as well, if you're going to France once a year, and you're going to Britain once or twice a year, and you're going to Mexico, and you're going to all those little countries, yeah, if you get Goldberg turning up at those places, I think that's great. I think he can play that ambassadorial role. Unfortunately, now Vince's hands are tied because he can't travel anywhere. He can't go to Saudi Arabia. He still has that contract. So where are you going to put him in those matches? You're not going to put him on, you're not going to put him as the opening match somewhere. You're going to give him a big match. And unfortunately, I think it's just been a victim of circumstance right now. So do I think that Goldberg should be wrestling Drew McIntyre right now? Absolutely not. And I'm totally with you guys on that. However, I just think that the plans that they had for him have been changed because of COVID. And I think what they planned for were those matches. You know, the matches in Saudi Arabia, they haven't been fantastic, but the crowds over there have lapped them up because it's that big star name. And that's why I think they picked Goldberg. So I'm defending Goldberg for that way. He obviously doesn't get to choose now what match he has, but I'm pretty sure that's what the plans were for Vince. He did not sign Goldberg to that contract so he could fight Drew McIntyre at the Royal Rumble.
I would agree with that.
Makes a hell of a lot of sense, yeah. It makes a hell of a lot of sense.
I'd agree with that. However, I do not believe that, as proven by the match he had with The Undertaker a couple of years ago now, isn't it? 2 years ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Bloody hell. He ain't got it no more. Goldberg ain't got it no more.
But then if you look at the stuff he did with Drew, but Dolph, that was entertaining.
But that's just because Dolph's great at selling, and if you use
Goldberg in those kind of roles and not necessarily have him in a what you think is going to be a 25-minute five-star wrestling match, just use him in those kind of like short roles, I think he absolutely works, because he is a needle mover. As much as we rag on him being at the top of the company, bringing back some of these big names does move the needle for WWE. It showed with the ratings and it showed with the demographics. It's just having him in the world title picture that I take umbrage with.
When you just go on.
Yeah, so the issue I see, and I can see this happening because it's WWE and why would it not happen? But if Goldberg wins that belt, what was the plan for WrestleMania 36 for Goldberg initially?
To lose to Roman Reigns.
Yeah, do you see what the problem is now? We're going to get Goldberg and Reigns and both the belts are going to be tied up. I can see it happening. Rather than getting Drew and Keith Lee and Reigns and Daniel Bryan or Big E, we're going to get Reigns and Goldberg.
Luckily, Drew got infected at the exact perfect time, so he doesn't have to be involved with Goldberg now. But
he's infected, but like...
No, yeah, obviously. Yeah. Hopefully he recovers better, quicker than Matt does, and it is a real case of COVID. But I was fully expecting it being Goldberg versus a returning Brock Lesnar for Drew's title.
The weird thing is that I always look at if a champion and a challenger, for that matter, is believable to beat somebody or not. I mean, over the years gone by, I've looked at people like Ricochet, for example, in Saudi Arabia last year when he went up against... Lesnar. Did I think that the Ricochet could have beaten Lesnar? No, not at all. Did I think that AJ Styles could beat Brock Lesnar?
Yes.
I think that he could have. I think that he had a decent shout at it. Certain people, you watch them and you think, okay, that works, that doesn't work, that sort of thing, fantastic. And then you think about when someone has destroyed someone so comprehensively. Drew McIntyre destroyed Brock Lesnar WrestleMania last year. Unquestionably destroyed him. In one of the shortest matches in WrestleMania history for a title. Does anyone legitimately think that Goldberg is going to beat Drew McIntyre one-on-one?
Yes, because it's WWE and that's what happens.
Yeah, I'm like Graham. I think it all depends on how you catch Vince McMahon on that day.
Coin flip.
We know what Vince is like. He'll rewrite that show on the day. Like, he'll have his Rumble winner set
Drew the three-time champion as well.
I'm saying this.
for that reason, I could see him losing just so you can... They elevate it by the number of titles you win. We know that that's not necessarily a good thing, but that's how Vince thinks. So, yeah, I could see him losing and then winning it back within less than a week and becoming a three-time champion. It's a coin flip for me.
I am saying this and fully aware that the whole reason that this Derry show exists is because the Matt Attack last year, me and Conrad decided to not do one, and then because we'd all heard that all the plans had gone in the bin and Goldberg became champion, as we predicted it was going to happen, Conrad, as well. And that's where Talk With Hale came from. Talk about stuff rather than predicting stuff, because predicting stuff, there's no bloody point sometimes, especially when they don't predict half, they don't plan half the show in advance.
Yeah, I think the good thing as well is having this show, Melissa's not going to fly over to England and fight me for the Fiend losing or whatever.
Oh yeah, but you're not technically a child now, though, so she will come and fight you.
Oh.
No
escape.
I thought you stopped the prediction show because you were tired of getting beaten by a 12-year-old or a then 11-year-old.
That just happens to be a coincidence.
That was the nail in the coffin.
It was. Although, the whole point of Matt Attack was to put other people over, which, to be fair, we do on the show anyway. Right.
Unless your name's Will Ospreay, and then we'll never put you over.
Fuck you, Ospreay! I am the table! Right, I'm going to talk about a table now.
And I'm only an hour in.
I actually wanted to elaborate a little bit on what Conrad mentioned a minute ago, actually. For anyone who saw the really cheesy press release video, it's on YouTube, Twitter, and other outlets. WrestleMania's next three locations have been confirmed.
Oh, have they? Yes, they have.
And I happily feel it. Now, the three locations, I love them all. I love all three locations. I love the fact that we're going to be in Tampa for the pirate themed WrestleMania we should have had last year. I love me a pirate, no problem. AT&T Stadium for WrestleMania 38 should be a belter as well. And WrestleMania 39 going Hollywood again, only 18 years after the last time it did.
And also 2 years after when they said it was going Hollywood in the first place.
Yes. They've said that they'll wait their turn, and well done to them for that. They know that the world has changed, obviously, and that people aren't being asked about that. This year again, it's going to be two nights again at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And this year, there's going to be fans back in. They have said one way or another, there will be fans in. Keep your eye on the local things for how tickets, etc., will be allocated. There's even some talk about the Royal Rumble having fans. Now, I think it's a little bit late for the Royal Rumble to have fans. Yeah,
plus, they've still got the contract with the stadium for at least another month or so.
But I wanted your guys' opinion. Mine. Everyone probably knows my opinions on this one, so I'm just going to let you guys talk. Is it too early?
For
the fans back. And I tell you what, seeing as how Conrad and Mags look itching to answer the question, Graham can answer first.
Well, you screwed me over, and I knew I should have gone with this first, because I had two things, and that was one of them, and I knew you weren't going to talk about the PWI, so that's my own fault for not bringing that up. I saw the same thing. It's very clear. One of the questions was, after 36, is it going to go to 2 days like New Japan? That's going to be the only contribution I can make to New Japan, so I'm glad you picked something else, Conrad. Obviously, no, because we've already seen that WrestleMania 38 is going to go back to 1 day, and WrestleMania 39 is going to be 1 day as well. So it's pretty clear. The reason they're doing 2 days is so they can split the fans up and make it less. But to me, it still seems way too early. From all the things I've seen from wrestlers based in Florida, and there's quite a few I follow on Twitter, people are not being safe down there. I don't know how you would manage that in a stadium that has a capacity of probably 80,000 people to get people who... we still know that people don't wear their masks over their noses. We still know that people... it does seem a lot. I just worry about, particularly when I think about what happened with the collective, the big indie event that got postponed and then ran later, the number of wrestlers after that who did have issues with COVID. Obviously, we don't know so much about the fans because they don't have such a high profile on Twitter. You're enlarging that on a much bigger scale. And that my concerns right now are just in the stadium. What about all the people who are traveling? I don't know why you'd want to encourage people to be traveling all the way to... I assume that they're going to be flying. I'm assuming they're going to be staying in hotels. And then I'm assuming after this event, they're then going to be returning to their own areas. So to me right now, is it a good idea? Absolutely not. One thing I know that the boys really wanted to go see a WrestleMania, and I know that will happen at some point. I don't think it'll be for several years now, because it certainly won't be this year. And I believe the next two are not really very convenient either. I didn't actually see the locations. I saw the names of the stadiums, but I don't necessarily know the names of the cities.
Texas
Houston, Texas, yeah.
Okay. The other but yeah,
is Inglewood.
Will be traveling.
Is it Inglewood?
Yeah, Inglewood, California, yeah.
It was. I wondered if it's because of the Hollywood thing. I assumed one of them was there because that was originally the plan for this year. Yeah, no, the short answer is no. I think it's way too soon. I'm quite happy to watch it on TV, and I'm hoping a lot of other people will as well. I'm not quite sure the reasoning for it. It worked pretty well last year, and Vince made, was it $100 million profit last year? It's not like he's short of money right now. Yeah, I think it's setting something that's unnecessary to bring so many people from all around the country into one place and then forget them to disperse when we're so close to people starting to get that vaccine in significant numbers.
Who wants to go next, Max?
Yeah, I've got to agree with Graham. I think it's way too soon. I know that I'm not even contemplating attending a wrestling event in the near future, even after being vaccinated, because I can't trust people from Western cultures, because we are incredibly selfish as a group of people. So yeah, I think Royal Rumble is definitely off the cards with the contract that they've got with the stadium and Thunderdome. WrestleMania, I wouldn't go to that show, but it's Florida. They don't give a toss. They happily will turn up. So how are they going to kind of manage the outbreak there? Because there will be an outbreak. It's as simple and clear as that. People won't wear the mask, or the wrestlers may get infected, the fans may get infected, and like Graham said, they're going to be then spreading this across the rest of the country. Hopefully, we can get enough people vaccinated where it becomes a bit of less of an issue. But yeah, it's ridiculous. The only kind of good thing coming out of this year's WrestleMania is the fact that they're keeping the pirate theme, because I felt that that would have been a really interesting kind of a take on WrestleMania. And I know we didn't quite get that at last year's WrestleMania, so hopefully they'll be able to kind of like really play on it for this year's WrestleMania.
Fingers crossed for that one. Conrad?
Yeah, I pretty much got to agree with everything that's been said. Like, it is incredibly irresponsible. And I think this is just really kind of Vince making a grab for money when really he didn't really need to. I guess like the pirate ship, and the fact that especially Kevin Owens, who said he wanted to jump off the pirate ship last year, and I guess it's kind of like the opportunity that they're going to have for like at least kind of like the next few years for him to do that. So I can kind of get it, but yeah, just the risk of people flying, like even if it's not from the UK or like anywhere else around the world, and you could just have people like flying between states and stuff, and it just seems really kind of stupid. Like, honestly, I've got Max, I know you said that you've got no interest, like, because you can't really trust people. I'm not going to consider going anywhere. I wanted to go to gigs and everything last year, and I'm not considering it until I've had like confirmation that the majority of the people like in my area or whatever have been at least offered a vaccine. Because I'm just not taking the risk, like, I want to see my grandparents more, and like I'm at risk. My mom's at risk and my sister's at risk, and it's just, it's so incredibly irresponsible for people to kind of be considered, I guess, each to their own, but like the fact that people are considering going, and it's just really like incredibly selfish. But yeah, I don't agree with it at all. Another thing I don't agree with is the fact that none of the locations announced are, hopefully we get 40, but none of them are St. Andrews, Birmingham, which is where WrestleMania should be, right down the road from me.
St. Andrews, that's a shithole.
I'm not even a Birmingham fan, it's just convenient.
At least Villa Park.
Oh, God, no. God,
Villa Park. Well, they use that for the Olympics.
You just get a nice big thing like Anfield.
Oh, turf.
I want to ask Darren and Conrad something. Matt, I asked you this and you didn't know the answer. I asked my boys what they thought the answer to this was. I was surprised by a statistic that I saw for the state that I live in. Assuming the vaccine is offered to you, how many of you will actually take the vaccine? And I know that there's certain fringe elements in the US, so I knew it wouldn't be 100%. I think it was only around 60 to 70% who actually said that they would actually take it. Have you guys seen any figures for Britain? I'm assuming it's going to be higher than that if you've heard anything. Or yeah, have you, another way, have you heard people talk about, well, I'm not going to take it because of A, B, and C?
I think the figure that I read the other day was around half of the population says they won't get it if offered. And then you just scrolling through Facebook, and that kind of gives a rough impression of who's going to have it, because you just see like pictures posted with like no kind of sources or anything. It's just idiots everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not just specifically an American problem. One thing that did surprise me, though, is I got a boy who's going to be a teenager by the time this episode is released, and he often get his presents are often wrestling related, and same for Christmas as well. He has actually got quite a few things with massively reduced on WWE.com. I was very happy to see with the old WrestleMania logo on, because of obviously the event being cancelled and it wasn't actually in Tampa Bay. So to find out yesterday that the next WrestleMania is going to be at Tampa Bay, he's already kitted out for the next WrestleMania. I'm really surprised that they didn't actually hold on to that merchandise for that little bit longer and then put it up. But no, they massively reduced it because obviously they made it ahead of time and then it didn't happen and they were left with it. But yeah, it might have a specific date on. Perhaps it says 2020 on. If it says that, I don't care. For one little digit, I don't think. So yeah, actually, I was really surprised yesterday with that announcement. I didn't see that coming.
It was interesting to see. I thought they'd stick around in the Tampa area. But I didn't think they'd do a two-nighter again. So that was surprising.
Yeah. Right. I think this will be like a test for them. Sorry, just to kind of add a comment. I think it'll be a test for them to kind of not have like as many filler matches. And this is kind of an opportunity for them to go like all out on both nights, especially if you want proper fans back. If you don't have like that kind of balance of kind of non-stop good stuff on both nights, then you're not going to kind of, it's not going to be a good event, and you're going to have a lot less fans on one night. So,
yeah, and I also think that if I remember rightly, they're doing the Hall of Fame ceremony virtually this year. So with 2022 and 2023 not having anything on the Saturday, perhaps that's when they'll be looking at doing a live Hall of Fame ceremony, or even an NXT takeover, perhaps. Or maybe those dates have just been announced now and the weekend's been left open-ended in case two nights WrestleMania does really kind of hit off.
See, I'm... Part of my concern, obviously, I'm against the idea of the fans being back. But at the same time, if they're going to limit... They could just limit it to... Much like with WrestleMania 3, they could like limit it to people only from the state of Florida, maybe can go to it, perhaps. It wouldn't be the first time that they've done that. It would be a way of keeping things in one place, perhaps. It would
all those infected Floridians, stay where you are. Create a petri dish at Florida and then just cut it off and then push it out into the ocean.
I'm just wondering if that would be as effective as, I know you're in lockdown right now in Britain, and even though I'm in America, I still see the stories, as effective as the people who are taking a 100-mile car ride so they can walk their dog, people who are going to their second homes in Norfolk and things like that. Like, I'm in an ideal situation, yes, but you've already said that you've seen idiots all over social media. Would you think they're really going to respect that? I'm pretty sure you can get a fake license that says Florida on it. I don't think that would work. And they're just going to resell those tickets. I'm curious about one thing, the price of those tickets. Like, I assume if you're going down there, you're probably going to try and want to buy tickets for both nights as well. I can't imagine Vince putting them at half price. I don't think he's going to be doing the fans any deals or anything. I'll be very interested to see the price of those.
We'll keep our eyes on that. I am the table! Okay, then, who wants to go next then? Talk at the table.
I better, in case you steal this one as well. I think I saw this about 10 minutes before I came on air. So, and you actually mentioned it earlier, Matt, and I'm glad I actually closed my mouth. I think mainly because my segment had already gone on like 30 minutes. It's the female roster on AEW. I did see Chris Statlander actually respond to all the criticism they've had. And one of the things that she did say specifically is, you have to realize that this is a very young roster. This is a very inexperienced roster. A lot of those people we've been talking about, and one of the reasons why I like the AEW roster, is it's people I've seen who've come up from the indies. And you got to remember, it's a very different scenario that they're in. When they're coming up from the indies and they're coming up quite as quickly as they did, obviously they had a whole roster to fill out. They had to bring up a lot of people. You're getting people who are used to wrestling in front of crowds of, no disrespect to them, possibly in the tens or in the hundreds at the most. One of the things that they are not focused on when they're doing that is wrestling for that hard cam. And that's something where they're not having the chance to do. Like, when WWE has brought up those same people, the Shotzis and the people like that, they've at least put them on NXT first. They have that performance center. They have that chance to practice those skills. AEW right now, as far as I know, doesn't have exactly the same level of expertise with regards to that, but I'm sure they're going to work towards it. I'm sure COVID was probably one of the things that actually set them back from that, where they just literally had to keep going as they were, because they had limited facilities. So Chris Statlander, hopefully, it sounds like she's going to be back in the next month or two, which I'll certainly be glad to see. Fingers crossed on that one as well. But yeah, I think it's very harsh when you expect people to come up from that level to suddenly not be able to be ready to play at that level as well. Matt, I'm going to relate it to the Liverpool. And I know, Matt, I know, Darren, you do your podcast as well, the Radio Techers. And the Liverpool players, I was listening to the Andy Robertson interview with, I want to say, Jamie Carragher on his podcast this week. And he was talked about the fact that he didn't get to play for the Liverpool team straight away. He's possibly the best left back in the world right now. But when he moved from Hull to Liverpool, the first thing that Klopp did was, you kind of put them on, you get used to the Liverpool way. You have to get used to that new style. Even as good as a player you are, it takes a little bit of time to make that adaptation. And I think it's the same thing with the ladies over on that roster as well. Yes, they're good wrestlers, but it's very different from wrestling in an indie arena to wrestling in front of that camera and having to make those spots work. So I thought that was good of Chris Statlander to defend the other people on that roster. And I like that she's taking that role as well, because she's fairly young as well. She has not been wrestling for very long at all. I think it might only be about 3 years. But yeah, I think we have to be a little bit more respectful of those AEW wrestlers. They're certainly doing the best that they can. But that's something, that skill that's going to be learned over time.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, even a lot of the younger male wrestlers don't have that kind of experience. Guys like Jungle Boy, Orange Cassidy, MJF, all haven't had massive amounts of TV time, knowing to work the hard camera rather than working the fans. So yeah, I do get that AEW need to be given a little bit of leeway in terms of that. Issue with the women's roster in AEW was the amount of time that they were given. When you're seeing guys like Cody Rhodes, John Moxley and Chris Jericho in multiple storylines and in multiple segments every week, and then you're almost getting one token women's match. And for the amount of talent that they've got there, I don't think that is enough for me.
Conrad?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a fair argument that they kind of don't have that kind of experience with the hard cam. But I think, yeah, just giving them the time, as Max said. The thing is, you might not have a product that you can kind of, or like a performance performance centre, but I guess you've got like the Nightmare Factory, where you can kind of teach them kind of skills that can be applied. Obviously, like not have like a hard count there, but kind of Cody wrestling for WWE and like Ring of Honor and whatever, and all these people produce for like TV audiences, and you could easily kind of have them and have Cody like and Dustin teach them like here's how you do it. But yeah, you could even like just whack them on Dark, cut back on the amount of matches on Dark and give them time to work on Dark, because not as many people watch it as they do on as they do Dynamite, or even like this kind of just air like something on Twitch, and you could have like a hard cam there, because no, like obviously Impact are doing good numbers on Twitch, but like I think having kind of like not still promoting it, but like not promoting it as much, and you could kind of give experience there. But I think something that they missed out on was kind of not putting their belt on Thunder Rosa, and kind of at least then, because she's got that experience working to a hard cam, and she's got this experience like as a kind of wrestler as a whole, and you can use her to kind of elevate the rest of that division. And as much as like Hikaru Shida is a good wrestler, I feel that she kind of hasn't got that kind of something that kind of that can kind of elevate an entire division. Like I think she's done a good job with it, but I think someone like Thunder Rosa would have been a better choice. And yeah, I think that time is like their biggest thing. It's not a matter of they're not talented, because they are. But yeah, it's time.
I've made no secret in the past about that the problem with AEW's women's division is not the quality, because there's amazing quality in that division. It's the pure fact of that the people behind the scenes just aren't giving them the time. I don't know who she's responsible exactly for the booking, but as proven when I've seen like AEW Dark, and you've seen people like Lady Frost, who is one of the best female talents I have ever had the privilege to see perform. And she's had two matches on Dark Graham, has it? Is that three?
I've only seen two. If she's had more, I haven't seen them. I don't follow Dark that closely, I'll admit.
She's certainly deserving of having certainly longer matches. I mean, she main evented Dark 1 week, which was fantastic. But then you think, like, there's so much other talent in that women's division, and they're just not getting the TV time. And part of the thing that you're shouting about with AEW was, as all about Tony Khan, not you guys, obviously, the thing that they were shouting about was, we're going to have the best women's division. Well, you may well do. But the fact of the matter is that everyone's talking now about AEW's link up with Impact and all these amazing matches they can have, this, that, and the other sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is that you shouldn't need to. Yep. Your women's division is already stacked with talent. Write it better.
Yeah,
I found this. I found this statistic, and I remember this is kind of slightly outdated because obviously women have kind of got a bit more time on Dynamite. But this was kind of mid-September, and we got a DM on the Chopkicks and Nearfalls account. And this was from someone that kind of done a bit of maths, and they worked out Dynamite had ran for 96 hours. Right, out of that time, about five hours and 25 minutes have been dedicated to women's wrestling. So that's 5.75% or thereabouts of Dynamite had gone to women's wrestling, which is, that kind of just speaks volumes about the how deep that problem is.
I was watching Graham's eyes do the maths as you as before you said about Lyle McConrad, by the way. So
I was just here to, I was just nice to hear it pronounced correctly living in America, so. I got one thing to throw in on time. Coming on upcoming MGB release, do a little bit of promo here as well. We've actually went back and looked at Thunder Rosa's Mission Pro wrestling, which was something I was really keen to see, all women card. And on the very first one, one of the people who is on there, I think I've got to check my notes. I think it's Red Velvet. Yeah, Red Velvet. I remembered her little stirring thing. I think she actually faced Lady Frost, if I remember correctly. On her matches for not on Dynamite. the After Dark, whatever show that's called. I can't even remember what it's called properly. I actually wrote down the times of the matches because it actually stood out to me as insignificant time. The match with Lady Frost that we saw, Matt, was 3 minutes and 20 seconds. She faced Danny Jordan. I think, if I remember correctly, these are the matches within the last 2 months. She faced Danny Jordan, 3 minutes and 22 seconds. I didn't actually write the next one down. Rach Chanel. I don't even know who that person is. Vert Vixen, 3 minutes, who's also on the card that I'm watching right now. And Leva Bates, 3 minutes and 40 seconds. So, yeah, it's. I'm wondering for things like that. That's obviously a very minimal amount of time. And obviously, Conrad's just said we're looking like 5%. I am kind of wondering for somebody like that. Are they giving them small amounts of time so they don't push them too quickly? So, and then just like, well, let's see. They'll either sink or they swim. So they can kind of build up their confidence. Or is it definitely a problem of they're just not getting the time? 3 minutes for a match is very limited to try and tell any sort of story at all. To have any back and forth, that does seem a very short amount of time for a match.
I think that's something that is done on Dark regularly because the show is usually around a couple of hours long and the amount of matches just keeps growing exponentially. I think it started with about 7 matches and now we're on to about 16 matches a week. So I think when you average it out, everyone's only getting 3 to 4 minutes per match. So yeah, I think it's just an issue with Dark in general.
When your internet TV secondary show has more matches than WrestleMania, you've got to start looking at that. You've got to start looking at A, we don't want quantity, we want quality, AEW. Come on.
Perhaps Tony Khan. This could be a devil's advocate for you. I could have saved this one. Tony Khan is a job provider. He's providing at least 32 people with work each Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. And
but no. they're all 0-hour contracts because it takes you about 12 years to get an hour's worth of wrestling in.
I'm hoping they don't get paid by the minute, or else yes, they are.
If they're paid by the hour, then that's a tough deal. Oh dear.
I think there's like an issue with like going back to like the original kind of women's wrestling point. I think another issue is like the fact that like not only they're not getting time, but they're not putting like as much effort into kind of promoting the stories. Because like we saw it with it was Emi Sakura and Riho at Full Gear in 2019, I think, and that match kind of there was no promotion behind it. It was literally okay, cool. We're getting Emi and Riho, and then it was actually Kenny shared somebody else's post. It was like a fan-made thing, and it was kind of like sharing their record and kind of like their relationship building up to this match. And then I think it was the same with the Abaddon and Hikaru Shida match, and there was kind of the main thing was, oh yeah, Abaddon made like her kind of debut on Dark against Shida, and now she's kind of here. But then it's just lazy because like you look at the men's storytelling, it's kind of stuff that's already been built, especially like with Kenny and the Bucks and that, and now like their big story is stuff that's happened before and they're just capitalized on that now. And the stuff with like Hangman has kind of flowed over from their time in New Japan and Ring of Honor, and that's kind of, you kind of see the difference. Like you look at Cody and the Bucks and the Elite in general, and you kind of, their storytelling is like up here because they've got stuff to build on. And then you look at everybody else's storytelling, it's kind of like it's not as good because they haven't kind of had those years of building up. And it's just, yeah, I'm hoping it changes soon because there's so much talent that's kind of being wasted.
Yeah, as someone who watches and enjoys AEW every week, one of my big bugbears with the company is you have to go and do your own homework if you want to know the backstories of some of the wrestlers. The stuff with Riho was a massive example. The storyline with Emi Sakura should have been huge because of the kind of trainer and teacher relationship that they had, but it wasn't. And yet they'll absolutely throw Cody's and Kenny's in the books as a backstory at you at every single opportunity. So that is something that really annoys me, the inconsistency with kind of like telling their storylines.
Okay, perfect. I am the table! Perfect time to segue to you went just now, Graham, didn't you? So, Mag, would you be so kind, sir?
Okay, so I've got still a couple of stories but they're all pretty negative. I don't really want to.
Come on, channel that bad cop, Darren. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to go with positivity, just because it's a new year, turned over a new leaf. So let's talk about five-star matches. Now, I recently, for an episode of Chain Wrestling, did some maths about five-star matches, and I was looking at the 10 wrestlers who have got the most five-star matches. Now Conrad will probably know these a lot more than we do, but it's currently tied in... was COVID a positive story? As positive as it gets, I suppose. But
chat that closely. I was like, I'm not going to interrupt. I'll just type it for the other guys to read.
It was a positive result. Not entirely sure I was positively happy about it.
So, the top 10 as it stands now. Tied in 7 is four wrestlers. Osprey, Kota Ibushi, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Minami Toyota have 13 five-star matches. Then in 6 it's Akira Tao, who has 15. Kenny is in 5th at 17. Atar in 3rd for Toshiaki Kawada and Kazuchika Okada with 21. Then 2nd is Kenta Kobashi with 23, and Mitsuhara Misaru with 25. Are they all right, Conrad, would you say?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Mag, before you continue, can I say that you can make any of those names sound so sexy? That's absolutely amazing.
It's a skill I didn't know I had, but it's a skill all the same.
Absolutely fantastic.
Right, so what I did then is, because I wasn't kind of, I wanted to know who has the most percentage of five-star matches, so what I did, I took the amount of five-star matches that they had and took it away from the amount of actual matches that they've had, and I wanted to get like a definitive top 10 of the best kind of pound for pound five-star wrestling. Wait till we get to who's the winner then. So the top 10 actually now goes like this. So Minami Toyota is in 10th, and her percentage was 0.48% after wrestling 2,700 matches. Tanahashi and Tao are in joint 9th. Then we've got Kawada at 7th, Misawa at 6th, and Kenta Kobashi in 5th. So the actual current four, top four for percentages of five-star matches are all wrestlers that are still very much active now. So 4th place out of the wrestlers that I haven't mentioned, who do you think that is on that list in 4th?
Have you mentioned Tanahashi yet?
Yeah, Tanahashi was 9th. So we've got left Osprey, Okada, Omega, and Ibushi.
I'll go Ibushi.
Correct. Ibushi is in 4th place, and his numbers are 1.11% of his matches are 5-star rated. 13 out of 1,169 matches total. So who is in 3rd?
Kenny.
Correct again. Wow. Kenny Omega, yep. 3rd place, and his record is 1.44%. 17 out of 1,176. So now, who is the 5-star king? Is it Kazuchika Okada or is it Wet Wart Will Ospreay?
I'm feeling itchy as hell right now.
So are we going for Okada?
Yeah, no, I'm going for Okada.
Okay, so Kazuchika Okada has got 21 5-star matches out of 1,409 total, which is a 1.49 percentage. And Will Ospreay has 13 five-star matches out of 789 matches total for a percentage of 1.64, which means that the best pound-for-pound best bout machine wrestler is a favourite of Talk at the Table, the nicest guy in wrestling, Will Wet Wipe Ospreay.
Fuck you, Osprey. Fuck you, Osprey. Fuck you, Osprey. Fuck you, Osprey.
A bit of positivity to end the show. Will Osprey is the best wrestler statistically in the world.
Damn, bringing that wrestle joy, TM.
700 out of how many?
He's wrestled 789 matches and 13 of them have been 5-star.
The mathematician is now checking your facts here, Max.
700. Sorry, give me those numbers again. 789
matches.
Okay, out of.
No, that's total.
Sorry, how many 5-star matches does he have out of 789? 13 out of 789. Okay. I misheard you when you first said your numbers because I did it in my head and I didn't get that. And I was like, woo, okay. I misheard one of your numbers. That's fine. Now, the mathematician.
You nearly saved the day then.
As much as I was enjoying all that, though, I do have a question, though, because I understand that Meltzer doesn't stick to a strict limit of 5-star. So okay. Do your figures include matches that have more than 5-star? So those 6.25-star matches, were they included within your count, or were you only including 5-star matches?
It was matches that are 5 or higher rated.
I just wanted to check on your inequalities there. As a mathematician, I just wanted to make sure the parameters you were using there.
Yeah, okay. Because Misawa has got a 6-star rated match. Toshiaki Kawada's got a 6 rated match. Kenny and Okada have obviously got 7 rated. And then Tanahashi, Bushi, and Will, their highest rated is 5.75. So they have been included in the tally.
I would say because obviously... nomination for Podcast of Year Jackson has a much better star system than
I mean that's not me saying it. This that's not me saying that this is the be all and end all. I just thought it was an interesting statistic.
It's interesting, yes, Max.
Will Ospreay is now undoubtedly the best wrestler that's ever graced the sport. So it's not Daniel Bryan appreciation night, it's Will Ospreay appreciation night.
Yeah, not happening.
I'm handing in my resignation immediately.
I will be
next long. Now I'm talking to the table. It's just me.
I will be long dead in the ground before I put that as the title of an episode of Talk of a Table, Megs. I'll be long dead before that happens.
Matt, he listens to this show, don't you know?
I'll punch him square in the mouth. I don't care. I'll punch him square in the mouth. I don't care. I'm infectious right now, still totally as well. So.
He's copied his face.
I am the table.
Oh, man, talk the table.
Right, just before. Right, that's like a good transition away from potentially like facing the wrath of the law for transmitting, knowingly transmitting COVID-19. Right, so we're gonna keep on Kenny Omega, I guess. And this is kind of relating to Impact Wrestling as well.
Yes,
and this is kind of talking the working relationship. I don't really want to call it a working relationship just yet, because we've had like all of 2 Impact talent on AEW and we've had like 1 on Impact to my knowledge. So I think that this is kind of like an unpopular opinion, but this is not on paper. I don't think this is kind of beneficial for both parties, and like obviously this is very early going and completely changed my mind, and hopefully like 2 weeks time when we record this again, like my mind will be changed. But at the minute this just seems like a get the elite over and get AEW more over rather than let's help out Impact. Because if you look at it, an Impact are promoting Kenny more than like the majority of the rest of their show. AEW are doing these paid for adverts on their show, and like a lot of people that I follow on Twitter are only watching Impact to see when Kenny comes on, and then when Kenny's done, then they're not watching the show.
The movie figures have shown that as well. That once Kenny's segments have finished, they're dropping off a cliff.
I think that's kind of an issue, and the fact that their show Rebellion is it the next one that they've just announced?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that has kind of got the kind of Omega symbol and it's inside a star, and loads of people are kind of speculating, oh, it's a Golden Lovers reunion. And this is kind of my problem. And this is, it's going to be so detrimental to Impact, especially like reading the reports that once Don Callis is done with his contract with Impact, that he'll be leaving and going to AEW, which potentially means that the Impact will lose access to Kenny, which is kind of a big blow to them. And it kind of seems quite, I don't know, parasitic, I guess, especially like at the minute, because they're kind of, I don't know, that Impact, I don't feel that they're getting much more out of it. Because obviously people know who the Good Brothers are. And people know the history of Bullet Club and whatever. So this isn't kind of bringing in like new people for Impact, because that, or like new people from AEW to Impact, because like it's, oh, the Good Brothers, cool. And it's just, I don't know, somewhat just doesn't feel right. And if they're going to go for this Golden Lovers reunion, which loads of people seem to be really kind of hyped up about, then it just seems that Impact, the kind of, they might end up getting kind of screwed over by the end of this. I'm hoping they don't, because obviously like collaboration is great. But at the minute, it just seems like AEW are kind of taking more from Impact than what they're giving back, which is something that Tony Khan's been critical of New Japan for doing.
Yeah, I do see that, and I think that's the pessimist in me. I've seen the figures, and when Kenny's been on the show, yeah, they've done really good numbers, but as soon as he leaves, the numbers drop off a cliff. So the benefit to Impact is maybe not as high as you would have thought. Another issue is how they've taken their world champion, and he's eaten the pin at the last pay-per-view, which really kind of makes Impact in general look pretty weak. When your world champion is in a multi-man match, is the one taking the pin, that makes no sense booking wise. But it's still early days, I think, in this crossover. I'm loving the kind of like links that they're doing back to New Japan and the Bullet Club, especially with Kenny wearing a Bullet Club t-shirt too Hard to Kill. That was a lovely little touch and kind of like really fed the rumour mill. But I'm quietly confident we'll get something good out of it. But as of now, yeah, I don't see who benefits apart from Kenny and the Elite.
Yeah, it just seems like as well, with kind of the world title thing and the fact that Kenny's kind of, it seems like they're going that down the direction of like Austin Aries, but not as much of an arse, with Kenny and kind of like belt collecting. And you can kind of, that kind of poses an issue as well, because you're going to have AEW world champion holding the Impact belt, and he's going to burn out very quickly, especially if he's wrestling on both shows. Mm-hmm. And he's working kind of behind the scenes as well. And you're going to, that match quality from Omega that we're seeing kind of now is going to go, it's going to go up for a little bit until he wins both of them belts and he's defending them both. And then it's going to drop off a cliff. As much as Kenny's kind of very kind of built to go a distance, I don't think he'll be able to keep up with double duty for like two high profile singles belts.
I was trying to find the numbers for last night and I couldn't. It's obviously way too soon. They didn't have those figures. I am one of the people that does watch the highlights of Impact each week, and I was certainly also one of those people who jumped on the Twitch stream once I saw that Kenny was going over there, because I wanted to watch, and I wasn't the only one. You could see from the feed, people were commenting. I'm normally an AEW fan, but I'm here to see what Impact has got. One thing I do wonder, though, is right now they're on that Access TV, which is a nothing channel. I don't have cable anymore anyway, but I'd never even heard of it. If they can manage to get people like Kenny on, while he's on there, if they can manage to get those numbers higher, is that something that could give them a better TV deal in the future? And then possibly they can start to grow a little bit more. I think while they're on Access, they are going to be very limited. Yes, you can watch on Twitch, but I still think that people want to watch, the majority are going to want to watch it on TV. Even though we know it's a dying breed and we've seen all the figures going down for all the other groups, that's still going to be your primary source. And unfortunately, Access TV, and I can't even remember what the one was before that. It was absolutely awful. Since it's, when it was on the mainstream in 2016, that's what I watched with Mason. When it was on, you could just flip a TV, there you go, it's on. I used to watch it then. But as soon as they've moved through the other TV brands, it's not been as effective. So hopefully, I think that's something that might help them. If they can start to get more recognition, they can use that as impetus to try and get a better TV deal with somebody else.
Conrad?
I don't think the TV deal is kind of going to change, because Impact's parent company, Anthem, owns Access. So that really they've got like no kind of reason. Yeah. Ooh. And that's going to be an issue for them moving forward. Like they've got, obviously they'll be streaming on Twitch. And I think that's where the majority of their focus will be, because like, where do they show one in the UK? It's Five Star, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Five Star isn't kind of, it's kind of well known, but it's kind of like the mid kind of, everybody, it's kind of like Freeview is kind of like one of the more obscure, it's like ITV Free or
it's Five Star basically. Yeah.
I think it's even lower five. View ratings than ITV Three. I'd say it's probably more likely to be the same kind of viewers as Challenge or Dave.
UK Gold.
Yeah.
Well, I'm showing my age here, and Matt and Darren, you might not even get this reference either. I thought it was an 80s pop band, to be honest. Five Star.
Well, that is an 80s pop star band. Yeah,
it was.
A little bit of recognition from you guys.
Yeah, it was. See, this is, because I'm bringing this up, just bringing up the fact that this was going to be my last topic. Hard to Kill in general, I thought, was a decent show. Thing is that I didn't bother watching the main event live. Mainly because I'm in recovery mode, obviously, so I couldn't watch live. But I had zero interest because I already knew the result.
Okay.
I mean, you mentioned, Mags, about you found it surprising that they had Rich Swann lose. But man, I've said this beforehand. I can't remember if it was on this show or on Good Cop Bad Cop, but I said at the time, I said there's no way Omega's not winning this main event. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I fully expected Kenny and the Good Brothers to win, but when you have one of the Motor City Machine Guns in there, and when you have Moose in there, why would it be Rich Swann, your world champion, that takes the pin? That to me is very risky booking.
Risky booking, perhaps, but it's personal opinion.
Saying that, I don't see Rich Swann as a world champion.
I'm about to come to that. Rich, you look at all the people in that match. If I'd have asked you, which of those three is more likely to be the Impact World Champion?
It's Moose.
Moose.
It's Chris Sabin. He's been there before.
Exactly.
Chris Sabin's about 4 foot. But in fact, a Danny DeVito.
But the thing, but my point stands. Both of you said everyone apart from Rich Swann.
Yeah, but they've got Chris Sabin is the only unproblematic man in that match, really, yeah, besides Kenny, because like Rich Swann has a criminal record. People are forgetting about that, and like they'll pull up like Moose on the fact that he's kind of friends with a convicted paedophile, and he's a woman beater as well. But then we're forgetting that Rich Swann was fired from WWE because false imprisonment and battery of Sue Young.
Mm-hmm. We haven't forgotten. Don't worry. We haven't forgotten that. We will not let people that forget that. Yeah, right, Graham. For the benefit of the tape, Graham was showing off a very stylish shirt.
That was brilliantly for the audio podcast. I'm wearing Sue Young shirt today.
Sue Young shirt, yes.
Nice.
Susan, isn't it now? Is it not Susan?
It is Susan. It's a weird gimmick. She was Susie, and now she's Sue. She went back to Sue Young for a bit, and now she's Susan. It's quite creative.
If anyone could pull it off, Sue Young could pull it off.
Yeah, I'd quite like to see Rosemary do something similar, to be fair. She does it, I think she does it on YouTube. She's like Courtney Rush, and then she's Rosemary, and then I think she's got like a few other characters as well.
If you ever want proof, people listening, by the way, we were discussing the Impact World Champion. We're instead discussing which gimmick is better for Sue Young, which shows how much interest there is in Impact's actual World Champion.
She's the hype for women's wrestling as well.
Graham, accurate, but it's also true. At no point was I interested in the main event of Hard to Kill. I had no interest in it at all because it was too obvious what was going to happen. And when you're trying to sell a pay-per-view, you need to actually have something worth watching.
And I actually Impact Plus, and I didn't actually watch the main event the previous week. So the Genesis one was part of the Impact Plus, and I watched the whole tournament because I wanted to see like the cruiserweights or whatever they're calling them over on Impact. And as soon as that had finished, I actually watched the women's match as well. But yeah, as soon as the main event came on, that was it. Click. I actually had no interest in that as well, which is that's kind of bad when you're not interested in the main event. Unfortunately, I didn't get that one last night. You got to pay an additional $40 or wait a month. So if I want to watch it, I will wait a month. I'm not paying $40.
The match you really want to watch is the Mortal Kombat one between Ethan Page and the Karate Come on, Man.
Yes,
well be the very worst cinematic match that I have ever seen. It's literally Filmora style level of video editing. It's absolutely horrific.
That's already match of the year, that they were talking tongue in cheek. Is that what you're telling me?
I absolutely tell you that if that's how Ethan Page is leaving Impact, he will be glad to be going, because that was horrific.
But
Ethan Page hated it, and he said that Impact wouldn't send him the final edited product.
Yeah,
and he said he didn't even want it to be on TV in the first place. So this is kind of weird. Also, it might just cost us a sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah. So, I think Ethan was saying they filmed it a couple of months ago, and he said, "Yeah, it was horrific."
I feel bad for him by that side of things, because I've got a lot of time for Ethan Page. A lot of time for that man.
NXT bound, perhaps?
I think that he would do well no matter where he goes, personally.
I can see him doing well on being the Elite. I'd like Karate Man on being the Elite or whatever.
Maybe he could rock it in New Japan, Conrad, as well.
Karate Man in the G1, that'd be awesome.
That'd be amazing.
The Rascal showed up in NXT recently.
Wesley, what a name.
Two-thirds of the Rascals, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've not heard anything on Trey Miguel. I actually like Trey Miguel. He was one of the serious omissions from the 2019 PWI list. He didn't even make their top 500, which is... Wow. That takes some doing. I was like, wow. I know that he's not everyone's cup of tea in terms of the movesets that he has, but interesting why they only picked two out of the three.
There's clear reason there, but hopefully he'll land on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that will pretty much do us for this week.
Almost. I got one little thing to do. As I didn't get to use my devil's advocates yesterday on Good Cop, Bad Cop, or I did, but you never get to hear them, I actually created another one while the episode was going on. If you guys would give me the option, I certainly have three devil's advocates. I know we've all done a devil's advocate before. Would we like to finish off the show that way?
No, I'm good. I've actually done one of these very recently as well, and I was terrible at that one.
Alright, shall I just go through the order that I have them, rather than trying to ask which order you'd like to go? Matt, actually, you're first, okay?
Okay. All right.
Shall I get my 20-second counter up ready as well?
Go for it.
Alright, I got my calculator up because I was checking Darren's percentages. Hold on, where's my clock gone? All right, there we go. Let me get my stopwatch up. All right, Matt, your devil's advocate for this week is, much like Donald Trump, I am demanding a recount on PWI's match of the year, as it clearly was Brock Lesnar versus Ricochet at the Super Showdown.
Absolutely. At no point should recounts not be allowed. I know that Ricochet versus Brock Lesnar was the best match of the year. And if you ever want proof of that, just look at the people that were there. There was loads of people there. Everybody was there in Saudi Arabia. And that is exactly why that 20 seconds bang.
I didn't know. Have you kept back
who was that impression?
Donald Trump impersonation for 4 years.
Was that meant to be Donald Trump?
That is worse than your Northern accent, Matt.
I thought that was his Northern accent. I thought, why is he doing why is he doing my impression for 20 seconds?
All right, Darren.
That hurts.
Next, sir. This was something that was very contentious for me. I got a little fired up on Good Cop, Bad Cop last week. I managed to calm it down a little bit since then. So, Darren, your devil's advocate is, next week, Kevin Owens should come out limping and say he is putting Adam Pearce back into the match just to confuse Roman Reigns and the whole wrestling community.
Okay, so yeah, I believe that Kevin Owens should come out limping. It's not like I watch SmackDown and have any clue of what you're talking about. So I'm just going to go off onto another tangent and think that Kota Ibushi was amazing in this year's Wrestle Kingdom main events and really is the best wrestler in the world today. And Wet White Will could go and suck a big fat one.
Unfortunately, my devil's advocates were WWE orientated because that was set for our guests. So that's kind of how it worked out. And Conrad gave me some inspiration for a different one as we were going. So that was where the third one came from. So Conrad, your devil's advocate is, in keeping up with Daniel Bryan appreciation theme, I fully intend to do a marathon of Totally Bellas just to watch mere snippets of my hero.
Sure. That sounds good, because Total Bellas is obviously like the greatest reality TV show of our time, and I would like nothing more than to see the antics of the Bellas, John Cena and Daniel Bryan, and their little vegan child.
Time.
John Cena's not on the show anymore, is he?
What?
Oh, he's not?
He's not with one of the Bellas anymore.
Well, that's just disappointing. Oh,
he's not? He split up.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you just don't know. You just can't see him.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure she's engaged to someone else.
She's just got a kid with someone else.
Yeah, John Cena certainly isn't on the show. She married, I think it was some French person.
Yeah.
And it was that guy that she danced with on Dancing with the Stars.
It was one of my guilty pleasures. So, but yes.
Graham, do you feel any kind of actual guilt about watching it?
I don't watch the Bella show.
That wasn't the question I asked you, sir. Do you feel any actual guilt about watching it?
About watching what?
Bellas.
I don't watch it. I just told you I don't watch
that.
You don't
you can't feel guilt things? About not watching
I didn't realize. I know sense. I know you lose your sense of smell is one of the things with
not
COVID.
Hearing
I didn't realize
or
sense of hearing.
You said it's one of your guilty pleasures.
Was listening to the Bellas podcast.
Yeah. Do you have any actual sense of guilt about listening to it?
About listening to it? Absolutely not. It was
it's not a guilty pleasure.
It's just a pleasure.
Yeah.
Oh. I thought the guilty pleasure was from other people's perspective, though.
No, you had to feel some actual kind of guilt about listening to it or watching it.
Ah, okay. I thought it was more how society viewed you. Like, if they considered it something that was inappropriate.
I've heard he listens to the Bellas podcast, and then now I am actually judging him. Because of
that. I haven't listened to it in probably over a year, but I know I listened to the first 20 episodes, well, and I think I reviewed it for a very long finished podcast of mine where I used to review podcasts.
I listened to the first episode off the back of you reviewing it, and it may well have been the very worst podcast I've ever listened to. That is typical of famous people jumping on a bandwagon that's become popular and not having a clue what they're doing. It was awful. So I didn't listen to it.
It was humorous for me, the lack of knowledge that Nikki Bella had on Very Common Sense Facts. I think their quiz was the thing that I liked more than anything else. When you listen at times three as well, you've got to remember it's only like a 10-15 minute listen. So.
That's the saving grace of times three, I think. You can get sharp podcasts out of the way quick, Tam.
I want to not do this, but perfect segue, Mags. I have to do some spiel, I guess, then. We're not going to talk about rubbish podcasts. We're going to talk about excellent podcasts. So, Graham, you're involved with a plethora of shows nowadays. do you want to talk about your newest project?
Sure, I will talk about, I guess this is a recurring thing. Well, I'll certainly mention, obviously, I'm going to do my socials at the same time. You can find me at MGB Graham. Mason is still going at MGB Wrestling Pod, where we're still reviewing indie things. We're about to start our fourth season as well, so that's been going for quite a while. Jackson, who jumped on the podcasting train when he was like four, and we did the wonderful 205-year-old live as he transitioned into a five-year-old, and then he kind of lost interest. Wanted to appear on MGB, which was fine, and then then suddenly now as a near 7-year-old, he wants his own sense of identity. And he made it very clear he wanted his own wrestling podcast again. So we threw around a few ideas to him. And one of the things I suggested to him was the Superstar Show. So I can go and fill in some of my gaps. So we've been reviewing those for 3 weeks now. You can find them on the MGB YouTube channel. And yeah, since 2009, we're going through watching. I love that 45-minute show. My attention span is pretty low. I can cope with 45 minutes, three matches. It's absolutely perfect. Jackson told me on the latest episode, apparently he's having four more podcasts coming out soon. So if I remember correctly, it's going to be trivia. There's some sort of table tennis soccer combo. I don't know why I'm saying soccer for you guys. Table tennis football combo. I think it's called Tech Ball. He wants to do one on that. He wants a disc golf one, and I can't remember what the fourth one was as well. So he could edit his own podcast now, though. I showed him how to cut the bits of silence out, check the start, check the finish, add them in between the music segments. He knows how to edit at 6 years old, so once he has his own computer, he'll probably be running without me, and then I can finally retire and put my feet up.
Wow. Never happening.
I know adults who podcast who have no clue on how to edit. So that's amazing.
The key thing with all things educational is you have to have the interest. Like if I'd have said, hey, I want you to learn how to edit, Jackson, it would not have worked. The fact that he asked me, he said on episode one, I want to know how to edit. And I was like, okay, but not this week because we're trying to want to. But yeah, we had time to do it. And yeah, he knows how to copy and paste and all that sort of stuff. The only thing he doesn't know how to do right now is to take an audio file and kind of put it into the place. But he, for a six-year-old, I think that's, I don't know, I can't remember what I was doing at 6 years old, but I was not doing anything like that with that level of technology. So it's wonderful. I'm having great fun doing JGB right now. I know MGB is really what I'm supposed to be promoting, but JGB was longer than MGB this week. That's embarrassing that my six-year-old had more to talk about wrestling than my near teenager did, but hey.
He's six and he's editing his own show, and yet Chris, I have to edit your show still.
Jackson does good rates, I believe, Chris, if you need any help.
Thank you very much, Graham, for rightly promoting your boys' podcasts. Absolutely. And of course you're on Good Bad Wrestle every other Sunday.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I totally forgot about that one. And if you, for some reason, decide you want to hear a bit more of me, I'm actually on the Devoid podcast this week as well.
I didn't get an invite for that one. Right, okay.
You're sick.
I still didn't get an invite. Spoiler, I did get an invite. I haven't had a time for it yet. Mags, you've got stuff to promote, no doubt.
No, this is the first ever time I've ever been on a podcast. I've really enjoyed it. Might do it again sometime.
Oh, God, we're hit by lightning there, Mags. Jesus Christ.
No, I am involved in every podcast that has got the slightest link to wrestling. I am either involved in it or I've been on it. I'm on everything. So it would take longer to go through them than to just say, listen to a podcast and listen out for me on it. But follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. I'll usually promote what I'm on there.
And as Tanner will say on Techers, he is the hardest working man in podcasting.
I'm not. I show up. I'm the talent. I just show up to the majority of them. I only actually produce two podcasts.
You still have to... You always do your homework, Mag, before every show you're on.
That is true, but I just have lackeys that do the behind the scenes stuff. Present
company, Mr. Burns with those monkeys.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Speaking of someone who has
the best of times, it's the blurst of times.
Speaking of someone who has his own network to actually worry about as well, Mr. Newton.
Hello. Yes. Still. Oh, my socials. Okay, so we do this like every 2 weeks and I'll never get it right.
And make sure you get your actual one instead of the one you've ditched.
Yeah, so I am a new person on Twitter. I have gone 5 whole days pretty much without swearing on social media. Oh my god.
Or without cancelling your account.
Yeah, it's going well. I'm being more sharing more people's stuff. Like, but yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at lcompact2 Newt. Like, two is in like the Roman numerals, like two eyes, Newt. So yeah, new year, new me, and all that. Listen to the Dragon Suplex Network, which I am on monthly with Val, who has a very sexy voice. Yeah, that's at Linktree /CKNF. Follow Chopskicks and Nearfalls at CKNearfalls. Chopskicksandnearfalls.com. You have to change that come June, because we're moving to like a new domain. Keep an eye out on my Twitter for the return of my weekly podcast, Jumping the Guardrail, which will happen at some point in February.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, comrade. You can obviously find me at MattTackUK. You can find this show at Talk at Table. Thank you, everyone, for listening and for putting up with my...
COVID voice.
I was going to say my croaky tones and your amazing angelic tones from my amazing panel, which is Mags, Graham and Conrad. Thank you very much all for listening. For God's sakes, wear a damn mask, people. We'll be back in 2 weeks. On behalf of us all,
we're out of here.
Fuck you, Osprey. We're out of here.
This podcast is a MattAttack production for Visionaries Global Media.